Hey everybody, it's the Nobody Likes Casey McClain podcast, and as many of you know, I have a new child. The only reason I'm even recording this podcast is because my wife and I, so we have a system. We implemented this system when my other daughter was born, where because I generally stay up later than my wife anyway. I'm a night owl. She is a I'm like a go to bed late at night, wake up on very little sleep and operate. And my wife needs a lot of sleep. So she goes to bed about 8 o'clock. And then right now I'm going to bed about 1 in the morning. And I'm on solo parenting duty, letting my wife have like 5 hours of uninterrupted sleep before I go to bed. And then vice versa. Like my daughter is usually, right now, she's pretty good about going to sleep after or during my wife's time. But that's our move. Is like one of us is solely responsible for our daughter, our newest daughter, during those stretches, so each of us can get like a decent stretch of uninterrupted sleep. And today we were like, well, why don't we just try to go to sleep together and see if she'll sleep in that early stretch? And we made it about 7 minutes and she started crying. So right now I'm in my living room, air conditioner on. You might be able to hear it in the background. We're at the end of the arsenal tonight. As a parent, you have a very limited arsenal of things you can do. We've fed her, we've swaddled her, we've given her a lullaby, and now she's in one of those swinging chairs. And that seems to have her at bay right now. But we can't keep her in there all night. We need this thing to put her to sleep for the rest of the night. So, fingers crossed, but you might hear it in the background. I'm not going to talk in depth about the labor process today, because I'm going to save that for the Poor Sports podcast, because my co-host, Alex Akita, is expecting his first child, and I think it'll be a fun conversation. So we're going to talk about a couple serious things, one of them being the repeal or the Supreme Court ruling that makes affirmative action illegal, essentially. But before we talk about that, I want to talk about another very serious thing. A local comedian needs your help. And this is serious. It's not, I have a sarcastic tone. And sometimes, and we're going to talk some shit later. It's going to be, I mean, it's still a serious topic, but I'm going to talk some shit later. We'll make fun of some people, etc. But for now, my friend Rachel Afjay is a comedian. Her husband, Richie Afjay, is also a comedian. And they have fallen on some really rough times. I will tell you this, like, unimaginable tragedy in my mind. I've never experienced something as severe as that. And I've been going through a lot recently, which some of you might know. My uncle spent about 45 days in the ICU recently and passed away, and we just had his memorial on Friday, the same day my wife went into labor. I injured my knee. I lost my job somewhat recently. There's stress in my life, but with all that being said, I'm not saying that to one up. In fact, I'm saying it to let you know, like, this is, you know, one of the most challenging stretches of life I've gone through, and it pales in comparison to what the Afjays are going through. And I'll put a link to the GoFundMe, and I'm going to explain to you what it is, but I'm letting you know right now. Listen to what I know. Listen to me tell a story that's not mine as best I can, and then, you know, hopefully Rachel is able to kind of express the tragedy of all this herself. But I want you to know, and this is all public information, by the way, she's been very public about it, but I'll put the GoFundMe in the show notes. So Rachel Afjay's mom passed away from an unexpected heart attack on Saturday night. It might have been Sunday night. It might have been Sunday night, but it was last weekend. And that would be sad enough. And her mom was far too young to leave this earth. And so it's incredibly difficult. But to make things significantly worse, 6 years ago, Rachel's sister died. My memory is that it was in a car accident. Again, like an unexpected death. And at the time, her sister had a one-year-old daughter who then became the, and then Rachel's mom, this child's grandmother, became her legal guardian and raised her from 1 to 7 years old. And then now this child has once again lost their legal guardian, the, Rachel's mom, her grandma passed away. And it's, I mean, so the AFJs, Richie and Rachel, have become instant parents. They've taken over guardianship of this child. I can't even imagine going from not having a kid. And then to top it all off, the AFJs have had a lot of fertility struggles. And actually, we've, there was a podcast, this podcast, the episode's called Miscarriage of Justice, if you want to hear a little more about that. Also, potentially, if you want to, hear me have some controversial takes that seem very trivial in the face of a tragedy like this. So the GoFundMe's out there. You can send Rachel money directly. That's what I did on Venmo. It's not because I have any, like, you know, any belief that Venmo, I just was, my GoFundMe account was being annoying, and I was like, I don't need to fuck with this. I know Rachel's Venmo. I sent her a Venmo, but it's Rachel Laundry. Might be Rachel. Her maiden name is Lorendo. It might be under Rachel Lorendo, but I think it's Rachel. Or no, I think it's Rachel Lorendo. Anyway, the point is that should be in the show notes also. Please donate what you can. It's, I can't even imagine these folks, what they're going through right now. And also, by the way, Rachel recently broke her wrist. So it's a lot. It's been a tough, obviously a tough couple months. Something that I've, you know, multiple things that I've never had to deal with. So very, very unimaginably difficult. So please, if you can, donate something. Literally, I think anything will help. They have an Amazon, like wish list. Also, the GoFundMe is being used to pay for her mom's funeral arrangements. And yeah, it's a tremendously difficult situation. So if you could do that, I would really appreciate it. It would be nice to know that some of you helped, and hopefully you've already helped. Hopefully you found out before this and you've already sent some money, because, you know, this is what community is, right? Comedians were like horrible narcissists that treat each other like shit a lot of the time, but on a rare occasion, comedy can bring some good. And though there's nothing that will ever bring back her mom or take away the tragedy and trauma of this situation, it would help. I mean, there's a kid involved in this now. And it's just going to be very difficult for a long time for the AFJs. So you helping would be a huge deal. Okay. So let's talk about affirmative action. Because today, affirmative action got, it was made illegal. Let's see if we can find some details on this. Affirmative action. Supreme Court strikes down affirmative action in college admissions. So I don't know, like, I'm not a affirmative action historian. I understand the arguments, or I'm aware of the arguments against affirmative action. Some of them are that it's not fair, that it rewards poor performance. I think, like, maybe the fantasy argument of people who are against it is that the people who benefit from it find it to be infantilizing and affect their reputation at work downstream. I don't know that that's, I mean, there certainly are people who are willing to have that take, people from different minority groups. I also think, like, it's hard to have a measured discussion about something like affirmative action because there's, like, one, people moralize the conversation, and a nice thing about using data and, to a degree, ethics and morality are intertwined. By the way, I have a sports center on in the background, and there's a lot of me that defends Macklemore, but these All-Star Game commercials where he's wearing, like, high-waisted mom jeans that are, and Pete Carroll New Balances, and they're high waters, and he's got bleached hair now. It's like he's not Eminem anymore. He's not, like, he's, like, trying to be Eminem, but like a kind of soft version of Eminem almost. Like, he's being Skittles instead of Eminem? I don't know. The career arc of Macklemore, I've been aware, because he's a Seattle hip-hop artist, I've been aware of him for a very long time. Before he made huge, before he had huge success. And it's been, it's an odd career arc. Speaking of affirmative action, speaking of somebody who's filling a racial quota, that's not true. I don't know. I think he's probably talented. The reason I defend Macklemore a lot is because I think his song Same Love, which was a radio hit, did a lot for to curb homophobia in hip hop. And if you're a hip hop, I had a former friend of mine say a really amazing thing about how he can consume hip hop despite, like, homophobia and misogyny. And he said hip hop is very fun to listen to anthropologically, like, as a study of how things were at the time this song came out. And I don't know if I fully agree with that as, like, a justification, but I thought that was an interesting description. So anyway, people don't think it's fair. People don't think affirmative action is fair, but the reason that it's difficult to talk about is because, when did affirmative action actually come to be? Because, let's see, when did it start? Affirmative action started... Yeah, okay, so this is kind of what I thought. September 24th, 1965, President Lyndon B. Johnson issued an executive order prohibiting employment discrimination based on race, color, religion, national origin, by organizations receiving federal contracts and subcontracts. So, and this, I'm sure there's, like, you know, continued evolution of that, but 1965, we're talking Civil Rights Act eras, the Civil Rights Movement era, and it feels insane. It feels regressive to turn back civil rights era legislation that was intended to further the cause of black and brown people. So then I guess the thing that I've seen a lot of today, so I think that again, it's a radioactive topic because it's attached to, there's two reasons. One is it's attached to this period of time of incredible progress in this country where black people took a step towards being equal citizens in the United States, black and brown people, but I mean, the American racial conversation is very much black and white. There are absolutely other people who are affected by affirmative action, but the heart of the American racial debate is black and white. And I'll talk about that again or a little bit more in a little bit, but that is the case. Like, that is the reality. And of course, so part of the reason, part of the motivation for affirmative action getting struck down is, and I don't know if this is like a genuine motivation or if this is a convenient excuse and a more palatable a more palatable group to claim to be supporting, because there's not a lot of appetite for things that are explicitly designed to support white people as policies, right? Like that's not something, that's not a winning policy, is something that specifically singles out white people. But in schools like Harvard and many universities across the country, we've started to see a suppression of enrollment of Asian American students who are outachieving their white counterparts, their minority counterparts, be they Hispanic, be they Black, be they Middle Eastern, whatever. I mean, I guess Middle Eastern typically is. Oh, I'm trying to go crisscross applesauce with my knee, and we'll see how long it lasts. Also, by the way, I could be completely preempted because my daughter might, my daughter could start crying at any moment, and then I just have to quit podcasting. So basically, these Asian American folks that these kind of white liberal folks claim to care about, we had the Stop Asian Hate movement. We've had the flattening of minority groups into, you know, into these, this kind of like white and non-white categories. So like POC is a pretty common expression of this. There was one that I kind of liked, and this kind of gets into my beef, and it's like both the thing I have a problem with, the fallout of this being made illegal, and also a thing that I had that I liked. And I've talked about this on this podcast before, but in the pandemic at some point, and maybe it existed before that, by the time it gets to my fucking stupid white ears, I'm sure that it's been around as a term for a while, but BIPOC, B-I-P-O-C, it started out, my memory of it was Black and Indigenous people of color, and I always felt that was like a very justifiable terminology shift, because what it did was separate Black people and Indigenous people from the rest of people of color. And in terms of family wealth, in terms of average income, in terms of education level, in terms of like, I think even like incarceration rates, etc., those two groups perform worse than every other racial group statistically, and also have a direct policy I'm so tired right now, folks. A direct policy to blame, a United States government policy to blame for the legacy of racism that has led to that poor performance. So, of course, Japanese people were interned. I think Chinese people were underpaid in part of the railroad building and were mistreated in a variety of ways. A very common thing is like Irish people, Italian people were treated like shit. Jews were treated like shit. And then people will moralize. They go, well, what's the, you know, these groups are doing great. Okay, fine. That's not a solution. They'll say, God, I saw one today that was like, Democrats want to be able to cheat their way into college. And then they want to get to college and they want you to pay for it. Then they want to graduate from college or they want to run for office. It's this like this vast conspiracy. And there's also a lot of stuff that's like, this is the admission rate versus the application rate for these races. And then these are the average tests and test scores of each race at the admission level, blah, 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 blah. And I guess to me, the thing that bugs me is we moralize. It's why I could no longer, it's why I find like the kind of modern libertarian party pretty fucking annoying. Is like, I would consider myself politically like a small L liberal and a small L libertarian. But neither the Libertarian Party or the Democrats represent my viewpoint very well. Nor do I think like the Republicans or conservatives or whatever. And the biggest thing I have is like this kind of ignorance to the idea that's like, you know, it's been this long, the problem still exists. And they go like, you know, this, I've seen affirmative action called like a failed experiment. And I guess I take issue with a bunch of this stuff. Now, if your question is affirmative action fair? I can see the argument against it. Absolutely. Is it just? That's a different question. But fair, I mean, kind of no, right? Like yes, I happen to be a white person, but if me and another person who I view as my equal we both apply for a admission into a school and I have performed better, I'm more qualified and they get the job ahead of me, that's not fair. It's also not fair that a lot of times the reason why folks don't qualify is because they haven't been given the same advantages. So anything that we're doing, anything the government is doing, is not going to be a surgically precise tool to improve the individual lives of everyone, right? There's a great Thomas Sowell quote, who is a conservative economist, by the way. Black conservative economist. That's, there are no solutions, there are only trade-offs. And that's basically where I fall on the reason I have a problem with affirmative action's fairness is also kind of the thing I have about like repealing it without having some sort of acknowledgement and plan in place to deal with the problem that affirmative action sought to deal with. This idea that affirmative action seeks to like create some sort of, to create politicians, by the way, just insane. But I do think that the spirit of affirmative action was good. I think the intention of affirmative action is good. Now, if we were going to have an argument about whether or not it improved the lives of black people, I think that's worth arguing. If we were going to have an argument about how it hurts the lives of Americans as a whole or of different ethnic groups, and is that the suffering it causes worth less or more than the benefits it gives to black people? I think there's a pretty strong, or there's at least an argument there, right? Like, that's my opinion. What I would say is that oh my God, folks, I'm so fucking tired. I'm just on so little sleep. I think I might have lost the first off. Do I think it's unfair? I can understand the argument that it's unfair. The impact that it's had, if you look at and I think this is a problem that we have, that liberals have, and I'm putting myself into that category for the purpose of this point, which is there's like no acknowledgement of the progress we've made. My uncle Lanny grew up a black man in Spokane in the 1950s, like, he was born in probably 52. My Uncle Bob was his best friend in high school. This is how he ends up being my uncle, is my grandpa adopts him as he's like a 15, 16, 17 year old, and he becomes, you know, my Uncle Lanny. And you know, nobody's got a better view of how the world has changed than a guy who grew up in like a predominantly white conservative area in the 1950s and 60s and 70s. The world has made, the country has made enormous strides to improve the lives of black people. And though I don't think we've reached the point, I mean, I think it's very obvious if you look at the wealth gap, we haven't gotten all the way there. But, and by the way, there are things, there's again, the like legacy of racism things. And even like, if you don't want to believe it's racism, the legacy of incidentally racially biased policies lead to things like, I want to say it's like 1 in 3 black men have a felony conviction or something like that. There's a huge segment of the black population that's incarcerated right now. And an even larger group, obviously, that's spent time in prison. There's this enormous wealth gap. And it's not insignificant. It's like, my memory is like the average white income, the average white family income at the time, I remember the statistic was like $55,000 family income, household income. And the average black household income was like $21,000. Many years ago, the wealth gap, well, let's see if we can find that now, actually. Because I remember many years ago, the wealth gap between white and black people was like the average wealth of a black family was like $15,000 and the average wealth of a white family was like $121,000. But let's see what it is now. Wealth gap, 2023. Black, white. I'm doing this on my phone, folks. So, oh yeah, sniff right into the microphone. Okay, the black white gap in wealth mobility. Is this going to give us what we want? So, I guess I'm gonna. Okay. What year is this? The article's from 2022. Let's see when the... Oh, you're going to be a subscriber-only thing. That said 60,000, 330,000. Let's ignore that for now. When that was all happening, the gap in Seattle, this supposed progressive bastion, this oasis for tolerance and progressive values, the wealth gap between white and black families' average wealth was like $25,000, white families, $425,000, and I'm sure it's grown since then. This is a problem that exists, and it's a problem that perpetuates, right? Wealth is there's inertia to wealth. It's a problem that exists, and most often what I see, people who shit on things like affirmative action, there's willful or not willful, there's ignorance of this problem or a moralizing of this problem. And there's no desire to determine like the cause. What are the causal elements? Why has this happened? And what can we do to fix it? And also, like, what are the other benefits of this? Like, what are the benefits to the quote unquote white community if black people have more money? It's not just black people that benefit if black people have more money, right? Poor people commit more crimes. That's true. So if you want to make a class-based argument, I could go with that. If you wanted to do class-based admission, class-based quote-unquote discrimination, but class-based, what you'd end up doing a lot, by the way, is on average helping black and brown people. You'd end up doing that a lot more than you would white people. I'd be fully fine with that. To me, that's a reasonable alternative. And also, I've said this for a long time, but one of the biggest indictments of American politics, in my opinion, is that black people vote like 95% Democrat. Poor black people especially vote are very loyal Democratic voters. And that's not an exaggeration, by the way. It might be an exaggeration for all black people, but poor black people, I want to say it's like 95% vote Democrat. And poor white people vote disproportionately Republican. So these two people who are facing, these two groups of people who are facing to some degree very similar challenges vote diametrically opposite. That is an indictment on our political system. That is, part of that is because our politicians want to keep us divided. And this is like, I know this starts to get into like some communist, Marxist, fucking proletariat shit, but it's true. If the fucking working class banded together, we would be very powerful. I don't know if we would be more powerful than the corporate donor class, but I don't even know if I count as the working class anymore, for the love of God. But I'm telling you, like, what I believe is that this is intentional. I think it's intentional that we disagree, that we're divided in those ways. If you can keep the majority divided, if you can keep the economic majority divided, you can stop them from reclaiming the power they should have in a democracy. But again, my problem is, like, do I understand, like, I've said this on this podcast, if I was up for a job and I found out that I was more qualified, but close to a black candidate, I wouldn't give up the job to that person. If I found out we were equally qualified, I would still want myself to get the job. I don't come from shit. I come from working class parents. We have no generational wealth. I am like, I've paid for basically 100% of my college. I have student loans still outstanding. No degree, by the way. I'm one of those statistics. I've worked very hard. I understand the people who feel like they worked very hard and other people don't deserve a handout from them. I don't agree with them, but I understand the sentiment. I understand why a person who is driving a forklift or running a fucking, who's fucking laying asphalt all day doesn't feel like they should be paying for someone to get a liberal arts degree. I get that. People who are sacrificing their body to make ends meet for their family, who are sacrificing their long-term health, don't want to pay from their taxes and their earning potential that's limited by their physical health long-term. They don't want to pay any more of that than they have to get, you know, my fucking kid to take an acting class. Whatever. I get that. The problem is, there's no, like, alternative solution. It's like, buck up. People, the sentiment is too often, like, buck up, black people, figure it out. You've had long enough. And then this fucking lady, Erica Marsh, who I knew someone named Erica Marsh before. It's definitely not this person, which has got to be unfortunate to have someone who's like a somewhat infamous person. I'm going to read this tweet that's like, again, I do think this is like a well-meaning person, but just an absolute fuck up of a tweet. This is this woman's, her bio is a proud Democrat, former field organizer to elect President Biden, volunteer for the Obama Foundation, she, her, Blue Heart. I don't know what the Blue Heart means. I guess it's got to be something Democrat related, right? This was the tweet she posted, and it's an absolute disaster of a tweet that I do think is worded poorly on accident, but it's, today's Supreme Court decision is a direct attack on black people. No black person will be able to succeed in a merit-based system, which is exactly why affirmative action-based programs were needed. Today's decision is a travesty. And then later she clarifies, and by the way, this is 9 hours later after this tweet has been used and abused to make this woman seem like a racist, because it's this crazy like horseshoe thing where horseshoe theory, is that what it is? It's this, we're in this like, the spectrum's a circle, not a line, right? That's kind of the idea. And you start to, when you get to the other side of this and you're an extremist on one, on the other side, you start to say things and believe things that would otherwise be considered very racist. Like, this is kind, that is a sentiment that if said by a racist would be considered racist. I don't think Erica Marsh's intentions were to say that black people are inferior. By the way, she's also, her most recent tweet is, and I'm sure this is related to people absolutely dragging her for this tweet, but her most recent tweet is, if anyone is a defamation lawyer who works on contingency, please DM me. Thanks. And I'm sure that's because people are absolutely trashing her to her employer, etc. And I'm sure some of these people are prominent and have things to lose. But this is her clarification of that tweet. Allow me to clarify this tweet, which is being manipulated for propaganda and misinformation by Ultra MAGA. The intention of my tweet is to highlight that prior to affirmative action, there existed a supposedly merit-based system for black individuals to gain admission into colleges. However, these institutions employed racial profiling to prevent black individuals from attending under the guise of this merit system. Merit is in scare quotes. I want to emphasize that my statement in no way suggests that black individuals are less intelligent than people of other races. Okay, so I think what this suggests is that were it not for affirmative action, college admissions offices would be racially profiling against black people. And though I do think there's probably schools that used to do that, and there might still be some schools where there's a rogue racist in there, but most schools, I don't think that the student body, the revenue source, would allow for that. I don't think it's a realistic projection that without affirmative action, colleges will suddenly start specifically racially profiling against black people. And that there will be no, I'm not a big, like, the, what's that shit called? Like, the, oh man, the, like, something hand. The guiding hand or some shit like that. The invisible hand for, it's like a libertarian thing or whatever. It's like the market influence. I'm not the biggest believer in that. But it just isn't realistic to me that we would go back to that and these schools wouldn't face just financially crippling backlash over it. If schools are truly this, I mean, this is like not a person who would believe this, but if they're truly these like kind of indoctrination centers, you think that that's going to go on pause because affirmative action went away and all of a sudden administrators are going to start explicitly discriminating against black people and the students at that school are just going to be like, oh yeah, that's fine. Yeah, sure, I go to UCLA. Go ahead. I love it. I love, nobody, this is not, it's just not the demographics of college, folks. It's just not realistic, in my opinion. But I also don't think this woman meant that black people were inferior. I think she just, it's just like terrible wording. And it's a very common thing, I find, when white liberals speak out on behalf of people of color, specifically black people, because I think that black people are very unique and it's their plight is different from that of other racial groups, especially American descendants of slaves. It's just like, that's to me the reality. It's the fucking a white lady like speaking out so often puts her, and I made it a lady, because, like, if we're being honest, it's a lot of times a lady. It's a lot of times a white lady that speaks out on behalf of black people. Quite often, this is someone who also might call a black woman something like her soul sister or some shit like that. Quite often, there's an ignorance among the people who are vocally supportive that ends up being, like, a bad representation. And part of the problem with these representations is now Erica Marsh becomes, you know, the face of a pretty bad faith interpretation of what liberals want out of this. But nonetheless, it's a weakness in the armor. Yeah, I said a weakness in the armor. I didn't say that other. I didn't use the other, that other term. I don't know if affirmative action is. I mean, to me, one of the toughest things is. I will hear like 21-year-old white women sometimes be like, "Well, it's not even any better than it was in the 1960s," and to me. You shouldn't be going to 21-year-old white women for that opinion. I'm pretty open to the idea that everybody should be able to have an opinion and an ability to express that opinion. And I think that short of having like a tremendously hateful opinion, I think that should be an opinion that's allowed to be said without consequence. But if you want a valuable opinion on the material differences between the way people were treated in the 1960s and the 2020s, I don't think a white lady is the person you should be going to. I don't think I'm the person either, by the way. I'm not going to tell you all the ways it's better. And I think if we would acknowledge that, we could acknowledge there's actually been significant benefits of affirmative action. There have been significant benefits of social programs, of scholarship programs, of all these things that are, you know, in some ways, are they unfair? Sure. Do they, I think, challenge at the very minimum the definition of how we think of what equality looks like in this country? Sure. Sure. But have they had enough improvement to justify like a little bit of unfairness? Probably. All right. I don't know. Is this episode coming out? Am I too tired to put this episode out? Am I too scared to put this episode out? I mean, I think I probably have an opinion that's like right at very close to in line with the most liberal opinions on something like this. I've actually been trying to think of, because I find some things. I find both the parties to be pretty self-serving and owned by corporations. So I don't really make like a huge distinction in my mind for what the RNC and the DNC do as being like these, like, to me, being a proud Biden supporter or a proud Trump supporter, both those things are incredibly embarrassing to me. I was a reluctant Biden and Hillary voter. There was never really a threat that I would vote for Trump, but there are things that I think conservatives, like small C conservatives, that I am on board with. There's things that I think they get right that other folks don't. And I think sometimes they get it right. And I think they get painted as racists. For example, here's a great example, actually. You want remember a great, this is my, one of my favorite examples of just ignorant white liberals was, and this is in the Biden administration, is when the Biden administration tried to ban menthol cigarettes because they disproportionately kill and injure black people. And black people who smoke menthols were like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, no, that's not what I want. Also, it's not going to stop these people from smoking in a large, in, you know, mostly. It's mostly just going to make them switch from menthols to a brand of cigarettes that they like less. Some, maybe some portion obviously will quit, but it's set that it was to me very much like a, like when a Target will like lock up their Hennessy and you're like, I think we get what you're saying here. All right. When a neighborhood will ban malt liquor and you're like, what are you doing? There was a, where did I live that they did that? Might even have been, I don't think it's Tacoma where I live, but these are policies that are very obviously aimed at a specific group. And it's tough. We can't say it. It's like, you know, it's, but it's like very obviously these are policies that are designed to curb the behavior of a very specific group. And they're incredibly insulting to the people. It's, smoking a cigarette is not a crime. Drinking a 40 is not a crime. Okay. Buying a bottle of Hennessy, drinking Hennessy is not a crime. All right. Maybe it'll come out. Hey, give me some feedback on this one, if you would. I find that when I get feedback, a lot of times people do agree with me, but like I did the Adam Tiller podcast. And I was really curious if I'd have anyone tell me that they agreed with him. And I wonder how many people have messaged him, because I think what I should actually send him a message and ask him that, because one of the things I've gotten exclusively, if you have not listened to that, by the way, go do it. It's on the Fathom and Friends podcast. But I got into a little bit of a disagreement with him. And at one point, to like prove a point and be funny, I thought to be funny, I got into the bed that he was supposed to sleep in. And I thought that was funny. He didn't take it as funny at the time. I think he understands why it was funny now. All the feedback I've gotten was like, it was very obvious that you were joking. Anybody in their right mind would think that you were joking. It's possible that he's getting the very opposite feedback. But a lot of times when I get feedback, people disagree or agree with me. So if you disagree with me, I'd love to hear from you also. DKC McLean on all social media. Send me in a DM if you would. Because it'd be nice to not have a public argument about this stuff. I like to learn stuff. I've really sought out opinions that I disagree with pretty often on stuff to see what perspective I'm missing. And so if you think you have a perspective that I don't have, I'd love to hear it. Especially, by the way, if you have an opinion that you don't think I would expect from you. In this country, there's a lot of efforts to raise the profile of like the unexpected source. And there's a concept or a theory or a philosophy or a fallacy maybe, which is like the value of the unexpected source. So what we see from an example of this is like in U.S. politics and in the U.S. media, conservative outlets are dying to elevate the status of black conservatives because we don't expect conservatives to be black. And seeing a person like Candace Owens have an opinion that, you know, kind of parrots or runs parallel to conventional conservative thinking, especially when it's like a young, attractive woman like Candace Owens, you feel it's easy to feel justified in that opinion. And similarly, I think we'll have like an army liberal or something like that gets elevated. A police officer who's a liberal, especially the biggest one is reformed conservatives. So like Joe Walsh or like the Lincoln Project guys, these guys that are like classic conservatives that the status will get fucking, you know what? You know who's a great example of this? I was just thinking about this today because RFK came out in favor of, RFK Jr. came out in favor of affirmative action, and people who recently started following him are mad because they don't realize that this guy who shares one issue of agreement with them, which is basically being a vaccine skeptic. That's the one issue he agrees with them on. And maybe like some kind of anti-war views on Russia versus Ukraine. That's another opinion that he might share with them. They're blown away to find out that this man has like a pretty mainstream liberal view on something. And to me, this is like that cycle. It's we've seen the same cycle from when like Mitt Romney dissents from the GOP on an issue and then votes like the conventional conservative way on the next issue. People are like, I knew he was a piece of shit the whole time. Fuck him, even though he... Liz Cheney, another person who's like... We're like, people annually get shocked multiple times that Liz Cheney isn't a fucking Marxist. Like, this is the kind of shit, like, RFK Jr. is a liberal, and nobody wants to accept that. Conservatives and liberals, they don't want to accept that. This guy's like an environmentalist, I would say like a borderline global warming alarmist. And it's hilarious to me to watch people who like thought they were, they had found a new Trump, like a more palatable Trump, finding out that, oh, this guy actually does still have all the same values he's espoused and that his family has fought decades for. Oh, wow. What a shock. All right. Thank you for listening. The Casey McClain on all social media. I'm very tired. I apologize for this episode if you hated it. Thank you for listening, and I'll talk to you later.